Or Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinashan Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanand. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namani. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nivase Sisanivani Paskachadi Satani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutala Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamcha Panchakalpa Chubhishchaki Pasandhya Vatapti Janam Pavanevya Vashadhyam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 8. Aho sanata bhavatas mayad vayam.
Aho sanata bhavatas mayad vayam.
Trivishtapanam api dura darshanam.
Trivishtapanam api dura darshanam.
Premasmitas nigna nirikshananam.
Premasmitas nigna nirikshananam.
Pasyema rupam tapasarvam sobhagam.
Pasyema rupam tapasarvam sobhagam.
Aho.
Aho.
Oh, it is our good luck.
Sanataha.
Sanataha. And it's not sanat. It's sanataha. Sanata means Lord. So to be under the protection of the Master.
To be under the protection of the Master.
Bhavata.
Bhavata.
By your good self.
By your good self.
Sma.
As we have become.
Yat vayam. As we are.
Trivistapanam.
Of the demigods.
Api.
Also.
Duradarshanam.
Very rarely seen.
Prema
smita. Smiling with love.
Sigda.
Affectionate. Nirikshanam ananam.
Face looking in that mode.
Pashyema.
Let us look.
Rupam.
Beauty.
Tava.
Your.
Sarva.
All.
Sobhagyam.
Auspiciousness.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Oh, it is our good luck that we have come again today under your protection by your presence, for your lordship rarely visits even the denizens of heaven. Now it is possible for us to look into your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances. We can now see your transcendental form, full of all auspiciousness. So, if we were to see Krishna face to face, this is the kind of thing we would say, isn't it? Oh! Oh, Master! And so beautiful here. Prema smita snigdha. Smiling with love and affection. It's so wonderful to see you smiling with love. Duradarshana, it's so difficult to see you. But we are so blessed. Isn't that how we would feel if we could see the Lord face to face? Maybe we'd be even more excited.
We'd faint first.
There's a Christian, a group of Christian musicians, and they have a song about what would it be like if I saw Jesus. I used to for a while I worked in an office with this very Christian lady. She used to play these Christian songs, and it would say, you know, would I dance? Would I faint? Would I sing? Would I be stunned? Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Lord in his eternal personal form can be seen only by the pure devotees. The Lord is never impersonal, but he is the supreme absolute personality of Godhead, possible to be visited by devotional service face to face, which is impossible to be done even by the denizens of higher planets. When Brahmaji and other demigods want to consult Lord Vishnu, the plenary portion of Lord Krishna, they have to wait on the shore of the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu is lying on white land, Swetadvi. This ocean of milk and the Swetadvi planet are the replica of Vaikuntha Loka within the universe. Neither Brahmaji nor the demigods like Indra can enter into this island of Swetadvip, but they can stand on the shore of the ocean of milk and transmit their message to Lord Vishnu, known as Shiradakshai Vishnu. Therefore, the Lord is rarely seen by them, but the inhabitants of Dwarka, because of their being pure devotees, without any tinge of the material contamination of fruitive activities and empiric philosophical speculation, can see him face to face by the grace of the Lord. This is the original state of the living entities and can be attained by reviving our natural and constitutional state of life, which is discovered by devotional service only. Well. Aho sanata bhavatas mayad vayam Travishtapanam mapidura darshanam premas mitas vignan nirikshananam pasyena rupam tavasava sobhagam. Oh, it is our good fortune that we have come again today under your protection by your presence, for your lordship rarely visits even the denizens of heaven. Now it is possible for us to look into your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances. We can now see your transcendental form, full of all auspiciousness. So, who here would like to see God? Anybody here want to see God? Just this morning, it's really interesting. I just listened to Prabhupada's lectures going in order. And this morning, Prabhupada was talking about seeing God. Some woman asked a question, can we see God? And Prabhupada said, yes. And Prabhupada said, you can see with these eyes. I've been having a conversation with somebody who says you can't see God with these eyes. He says, only in the heart, not with the eyes. Prabhupada's saying, you can see with these eyes, but you have to have love. So. He says, Krishna is there. Always, 24 hours. Do we accept that at least theoretically? At least theoretically, we accept, yes. We have these paintings. Do we accept at least philosophically, theoretically, that Krishna is actually there in that painting? Yes? At least philosophically. We have these three paintings. We have the deities. Krishna says he's the light of the sun. He's in our heart. So he's here. But maybe we can't see him. And the sad thing is that that means that we don't have love. At least not enough. That's a hard thing to admit. Generally, we feel it's Krishna's fault. And Prabhupada says here that those who have love without any tinge of the material contamination of fruitive activities and empiric philosophical speculation can see him face to face by the grace of the Lord. So they're saying, Sobham, it's our good fortune. It's by grace. And the fact that it's by grace is what makes us blame Krishna, because we say, well, if it's by grace, you could show yourself to me if you wanted to. Well, that's true. But why doesn't he want to? So what does this mean, tinge of material contamination, a fruit of activities and empiric philosophical speculation? This means a desire to have something other than love. It means a desire to use rather than love. So, in this world, mostly, our loving relationships are exploitive to one degree or another, generally. Maybe there's some exception, but usually, when I love somebody, they love me. There's some amount, 1% or 100%, somewhere, where I want to use them for my own purpose. I don't simply want them to be happy. So I was recently dealing with a case where somebody had to decide, do I want the person I love to be happy, or do I want them to be with me? Sometimes in order for the person we love to be happy, we have to be separated from them. Yes? Sometimes in order for someone to be happy, we have to give up our relationship with them. I'm willing that I don't have any relationship with you if that will make you happy. This is actually the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. Like it says, the gopis are happier when Krishna's enjoying with another gopi. I mean, sometimes they show jealous anger because Krishna enjoys having his girlfriends compete for him. Even ordinary people, right? Like the princesses, they would have all these men come for their swayamvara, and that was fun, you know. It would be fun to have 1,000 men each want you to marry them, and you get to pick the one you want, right? Or for a man to have 10 women competing for his affection. But they do that as a lila. But their mood is, if Krishna's happier with another gopi, let him be with another gopi. It says that Radharani feels 10 million times happier when Krishna's with another gopi than when he's with her. This is real love. Real love is whatever makes you happy. Maybe you could open that window too. That would be all the way, like not just at the top, but all the way. Oh, okay.
But some sound is coming
out. I see. Just some air is nice. But lust is, I want to be happy at your expense. I mean, it's okay if you're happy too. That's okay. I don't mind if you're happy. I'll even try to make you happy as a way of manipulating you. I'll make you happy because I figure if I make you happy, then you'll give me something. But I'm willing to be happy at your expense. I have a willingness. If it's necessary for my happiness for you to suffer. And of course, real evil is, I want to be happy at your expense. Ultimate evil is, I find happiness at making you suffer. That's the ultimate definition of evil. I find happiness at being the instrument of someone else's suffering. I enjoy causing pain to others. That's the ultimate envy and malice and evil. But lesser than that is, you know, I take pleasure in your pain. We feel that way if some enemy of ours suffers. You know, oh good, they're suffering. And lesser than that is, I don't want you to suffer. And in fact, I'd like you to be happy. But if you need to suffer for me to be happy, that's okay. Because my happiness is more important than yours. So if we go to Krishna, but our mood is that I want to enjoy the world as a materialist. Enjoying the world as a materialist, by definition, means separately from Krishna. That's what it means. Enjoying the world in Krishna's service is not enjoying the world. It's a different thing. But if I want to enjoy the world separately from Krishna, but I want Krishna to bless that. You know, I was just reading in Krishna book when Krishna enters into Mathura, He gives like three people the benediction of going back to Godhead in a row. He must have been in a particular mood that day. And he was the tailor, the florist, and one other. Kuja. Yes. All that one day. After Krishna kills the washerman, the tailor comes. Krishna says, you go back to Godhead and you can also enjoy anything you want in this world. And he goes to the florist, Sudama gives him the same thing, Kukja, same thing. And I thought, that's what I want. I got to go into the Leela right there, you know, when I go into Krishna's Leela. I got to be there in that day in Mathura when he's in this, you know, go back to Godhead and enjoy your senses too. I got to get in the line, you know. He doesn't usually give out those benedictions. Of course, those people, he was not, they were not wanting to enjoy their senses separately from Krishna. But when I feel like that, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, let me be an all-out materialist and still get Krishna prema. But I want both. Well, it's exploitive. That's like the, typically it's a man, but perhaps women do this also. They want to keep their wife and have an affair. You know, most of the time when men have an affair, they don't want to leave their wife. They like their wife. They like that somebody's cleaning their house and cooking their meals and giving them children and giving them stability. And they don't want to give that up. They tell their girlfriend, oh, very soon I will divorce my wife for you. But they're lying. And the girlfriend is thinking, oh, he loves me so much. He will leave his wife and children for me. But he doesn't. Right? And usually the wife does not like this. Generally. She says, get out. So Krishna also doesn't like it. If we say, Krishna, I want you there. You maintain me. You protect me. You give me spiritual ecstasy. You liberate me from the world. And I can also go out and enjoy separately from you in an envious, exploitive way. And I know I'll always have you to come home to. He doesn't like that. It's not love. So whether we want fruitive activities or empiric philosophical speculation means we want liberation. So whether we want material sense gratification or liberation, those are both self-centered, which is the antithesis of love. It's the antithesis of reality. I am a part of Krishna. I am not a separate universe. So as long as I have that mentality, I can see Krishna only vaguely, briefly. If I'm worshipping Krishna with that mentality, like the demigods, they can go to the shore of the ocean of milk, they can hear a message. Maybe sometimes Krishna comes to their sacrifices, right? They may come. The Lord may come. But they see him briefly. And they're not really having a full loving relationship. So we may see Krishna briefly. We may have some vision while we're chanting. We may have some experience while we're taking prasadam or while we're in the kirtan or japa. Or, you know, we have these glimpses. Yes, everybody has, I'm assuming. Some brief, partial experience, which is amazing. And we go, wow, Krishna's real. But as long as we have this, you know, we really can't see him. Because Krishna's not interested in letting people exploit him. We don't want people to exploit us. And he has the power to make himself hidden to the exploiters. I mean, in our lives, we may, you know, block from our lives exploiters, isn't it? On social media, you can block people. I mean, several times I've had people I don't know, they're always Indian men, call me at the middle of the night. I mean, I realize one reason, practical reason, is that in India there's only one time zone. And so if you're born in India and you grow up in India, the concept that people in other parts of the world are in different times is very difficult to understand. But still, you know, calling someone you don't know at some random time. And then I say, if you do this again, I will block you. And they do it again, and I block them. I mean, usually they're calling to find out something about Krishna, but anyway. It's like... And when I tell them, if you call me again, I'll block you, they say, but I wanted to ask a question about Krishna. I say, it doesn't mean you can call me at 1 in the morning. You know, without asking me first. And I block them. So Krishna also, because when a person does that, what are they thinking of? They're using me for themselves, isn't it? Isn't that what they're doing? They don't care how it inconveniences me or what it does to them. They don't care. Oh, I have a philosophical question. I should be able to call you at 1 in the morning, even though you don't know me. So Krishna blocks us. It's very simple. He blocks us. He's like, sorry, I'm not available to be exploited. If you want to exploit me, Krishna says, you know what? I take the form of the material universe. The material universe is the universal form of the Lord. You can exploit me like that. Here's my body. The trees are my hairs. The mountains are my bones. The clouds are also my hair. The sky is my navel. The rivers are my veins. Take it, exploit it. There you go. But you're not going to have a loving relationship with the universal form. You're not going to be satisfied, Krishna's saying, with relating to that form of me. We can use the universal form to spark remembrance of Shyama Sundar. And even up to the level of the demigods, we can say, well, I'm serving Krishna. The demigods are serving Krishna, I'm sorry to say, at least better than I am. Maybe you're all serving better than the demigods, but at least for me, I'm sure Indra and Chandra and Vayu are doing much better service for the Lord than I ever do. They're taking some big responsibility in the universe. They're very much in sattva-gun. They're much more elevated than I am. And still, I mean, Krishna will see them sometimes. But, bless you. But they're also frustrated. Now, it's very interesting here. I always find it interesting in Prabhupada's books, and with Krishna consciousness in general, how no matter how often we read the books and how often we contact them, there's always something new, isn't it? So Prabhupada says here, if you're pure, you can see the Lord face to face by the grace of the Lord. And then he says, and please listen to this very carefully, this is the original state of the living entities. So what does this refer to? Seeing the Lord face to face. I'm sorry, there's no other way to interpret that. Now, maybe we can look up, I'm in the middle of discussing BBT book editing right now with a number of people, so maybe if we looked up the transcripts, we find out that Prabhupada didn't say this, that an editor put that in, I don't know. But assuming that Prabhupada said this, and you know this is in the first canto, we could easily go to Prabhupada's original Bhagavatams. That would be interesting. Anybody have access to Prabhupada's original? We have an original Bhagavatam there? That Prabhupada brought from India? Oh, look at that. Let's go see if this is exactly what Prabhupada said in the original Bhagavatam. Is that part one? Does it have, or it wouldn't be part one? Does it have chapter 11 in it, is what we want to know. Chapter 11 might not be in the first part. What's the last chapter? It has chapter 11. Okay, why don't you look up the purport to text 8 and see if this is exactly Prabhupada's words. one thing that's happening with these editing discussions is I'm becoming suspicious. So what is it? Did you find it? 11:8?
Yeah, but it's not written like 1, 2, 3, you need to find it.
Interesting. Prabhupada wrote good luck as one word. Yes, this is exactly what Prabhupada says here. Okay, Prabhupada had it eye to eye instead of face to face. He said, therefore, the Lord is rarely seen by them, but the inhabitants of Dwarka, on account of their being pure devotees, without any tinge of material contamination, or fruit of activities and empiric philosophical speculation, which he spelled wrong, can see him eye to eye by the grace of the Lord. This is the original state of the living entities. Interesting. There's Prabhupada quotes a verse here which has been removed. This is the original state of living entities and can be attained by reviving our natural and constitutional state of life discovered by devotional service only. So it's practically identical, hasn't been changed, except face to face has been changed from eye to eye. Well, I think that's pretty clear. I really think that's pretty clear. The original state is to see Krishna eye to eye. That's our original state. It's a problem for some people. It's a problem for some people. So, at least Prabhupada here is making it very clear. Our original state is to see Krishna eye to eye. Our original state is not in the Brahman. Our original state is not in some situation where we don't have a personal relationship. And then Prabhupada said, can be attained by reviving. The word reviving is interesting. Vive means life, to give again life to. Our natural and constitutional state of life. So, this is a recurrent theme that what is natural for us, our nature, what is our constitution, what is our essence, what is original to us, is to be seeing the Lord face to face. That's what's original to us. So how are we going to do this? We're going to do this by getting rid of our exploitive mentality. Why don't we get rid of our exploitive mentality? Even after so many months and days and weeks and years and decades and maybe lifetimes, why do we hold on to this? I want to see God, but I'm not willing to let go. So how do we deal with this? Well, we have to want to see God badly enough. We have to want to see God badly enough. We have to want to go back to our original position intensely enough that we don't care what we have to give up to get that. Anything. That's all. And that has to be genuine. It has to be real. It can't be faked. Krishna doesn't like it being faked. If we go to Krishna and say, you know, I want pure devotional service and I'll do anything, and he knows in our heart that's not true. I got an email the other day from a man who had been, he had had an affair and that he was beating his wife, and I had seen them a few weeks ago. And I said, look, you need to immediately get counseling. I said, starting tomorrow morning. It was like 8 o'clock at night. I said, starting tomorrow morning, you find somebody and you get into counseling and you get help. This has to stop. Now, then he wrote me an email. My wife doesn't trust me. And I'm thinking, why should she trust you? I can't tolerate that she doesn't trust me, so I hit her again. And then he wrote, I am willing to do anything to change, but I haven't yet seen a therapist because I don't think it's all my fault. And I wrote back to him and I said, so what I hear you saying is even though you had an affair, or more than one, 2 years ago, and since then you've been beating your wife, you still think she should trust you, and if she doesn't, there's something wrong with her. And you haven't seen a therapist, but you're willing to do anything. So often we say, I'm willing to do anything. Krishna should trust me. Why doesn't Krishna trust me? Why doesn't Krishna reveal himself to me? After all, I haven't been in Maya for at least 5 minutes. The last three mantras I chanted with attention. What's his problem? He's the one who should see a psychiatrist. Maybe Krishna has issues that he didn't grow up with his real parents. And yes, I'm willing to do anything except not this and this and this or this. Or this, or this, or this, and oh, well, not this either, and not this either. So we have to eventually want Krishna so much that we give up all of this ridiculous excuses and justifications. And frankly, we have to be patient with ourselves, enthusiasm, patience, and confidence. It may take a while before we can really say sincerely, yes, I am willing to give up anything. Because I want Krishna so much that whatever price I would have to pay is worth it. And of course, when you give up anything, you don't really give up anything. That's the irony. Because Krishna is everything. I mean, a simple example is many, many times people come to me with problems where some friend or relative doesn't accept their Krishna consciousness. And for them it's a very big problem being accepted by their friends, by their family. I remember once I was in, I think it was in Oman, when somebody said this problem to me, and my initial reaction was frankly arrogance. I was thinking, what a stupid problem that you care so much about what your friends and family think of you that you're hesitant to be Krishna conscious. And then Krishna reminded me there was a time when that was a big problem for me. There was that time when we moved from, that's moving from Adushraddha to Sadhu Sangha. That's the first price. In Adushraddha, you don't have to pay any price at all. There's no price for Adushraddha. Yeah, I believe in God. Sure, there's a God. What are you doing about it? Nothing in particular. Put up a Christmas tree in my house. I pray to God, you know, if my mother's sick or if I want my football team to win, then I pray. But there's no price. And as soon as you go from Adushraddha to Sadhu Sangha, as soon as you change your Sangha, immediately there's a price. As soon as you associate with sadhus, people who are not sadhus, some of them will criticize you. And it may be your parents. It may be your children. For most of us who came to Krishna consciousness as adults, as young adults, it was our parents. But in some places, like in China, there's many people who come to Krishna consciousness when they're elderly and their children criticize them. They told me their children say, how can you stop making offerings to the ancestors? How can you give up our traditional religion? They get it from their children. Sometimes it's your spouse. Sometimes it's your friends. Sometimes it's the other people at school. Sometimes it's people at your work. But somebody will criticize you. Generally. Maybe someone that you like, that you care about, and it's painful. And it's a price. And Krishna reminded me, it was a time you had to pay that price, and it was difficult, and I remembered. When I was in university, and I really decided I want to be a devotee. And I had to said to my friend, sorry, you know, I'm not going to hang out with you anymore and do what you're doing. And my best friend rejected me. She just said, well, if you're not interested in the kind of things we used to do, then we don't have a relationship anymore. What's our relationship going to be based on? And it was very, very painful. But now, for me, it's a nothing. I don't have any pain about things like that anymore at all. I mean, it's completely absent. But at the time, it was this huge, huge sacrifice. You know, and then when I moved into the ashram, I had all these record albums. You know what record albums are? That's way before any of your time, probably. Maybe you guys, do you remember records? So I had a whole record collection, you know, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Moody Blues and whatever. And I was really attached to my music. I still really like music. You know, to move in the ashram meant giving them away. I should have had my parents keep them, and then, you know, 20 years later I could have sold them, made a lot of money. But I wasn't thinking like that at all. I was just... gave away my car, everything. But it was hard. It was very difficult. To get Krishna, I have to give away my record albums. I mean, today, to me, this sounds ridiculous. That I would even have some angst about this. Do you understand? I just look at this from myself now and go, seriously? I was considering my records instead of Krishna? It was a problem for me, choosing between my records and God? Obviously, I gave them up and I'm here. So in the similar way, the things, whatever we're holding on to now, you know, there will come a time that we'll look back and say, really? Seriously? I was holding on to that? Like Dhruva Maharaj says, you know, when he found Krishna, when he saw Krishna face to face, he's like, really? I wanted the universe? That was what he wanted. He didn't want a, you know, Rolling Stones record album. He wanted the universe. He wanted to be a greater ruler than Brahma. He wanted to be the king of the universe. And when he just saw the Lord, he's like, I wanted to be the king of the universe? What a fool I am. That was nothing compared to the Lord. So we do have to be patient. You know, the things that right now in our life seem like huge obstacles and huge struggles and huge attachments and huge problems, the time will come when we won't even remember that we had that problem. Like when that woman was talking to me, I couldn't even remember that I had that problem. It was so far away and so long ago that I was just like, what a stupid problem. And Krishna had to remind me, you didn't always think it was a stupid problem. There was a time when it was the biggest question in your life. So to keep increasing our attachment to Krishna, our faith in Krishna, and the time will come when we really can let go of all of these things. And when we can say with sincerity, my Lord, I only want to love you. Even if I never see you. Isn't that the irony? The last verse of the Shikshastika, Mahaprabhu in the mood of Radharani is, even if I never see you. And it is exactly that mentality that induces the Lord to want to have us see him. If the real mood is, my Lord, I want to serve you, I want to make you happy, I only want to love you, even if I get nothing out of this, Even if I get only pain, even if you trample me by your embrace, make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, even if all I get in exchange is pain, still I want to make you happy. Now, materially, if we do that, that's a really dysfunctional relationship. But spiritually, when we do that with Krishna, one is actually experiencing the greatest happiness. So when the day comes that we say the Shikshastika not as a ritual, you may embrace me or you may make me be brokenhearted by not being present before me. And you are always my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. But I'm only going to love you if you do this and this. So when it comes to the point that's our, Prabhupada was saying in this lecture I heard this morning, the price to see God is when the world is vacant without God. So nyayitam jagat sarvam govindavirahim. He said that is the price. In other words, nothing has value without Krishna. Nothing. And that really means nothing. Kunti's saying, you know, I don't even want a mundane relationship with my family. Nothing. Again, that doesn't mean artificially in some great enthusiasm of fanaticism that, you know, you leave your family and your bank account and your job and you go sit at Radhakund and try to chant 150 rounds a day and think you're so surrendered. That's not what it means, and many of us thought that that's what it meant, and we found out that that's not what it means. Even Arjuna thought that's what it means. Arjuna thought, yeah, surrender means I give up the battle and I give up my family and I just walk away from everything, and that's surrender. So that's not what surrender means. That's a parody. It's a mockery of surrender. That's just the desire, frankly, for liberation. But when we do get to that point, sunyayitam jagat sarvam, nothing has meaning without you, Lord. You're the only one who has meaning. I only want you. I only want to please you. I only want to serve you. And I want nothing from you. Of course, I want to see you. I want to be with you. It's not that the devotees are indifferent. It's not that Mahaprabhu is like, well, I see Krishna. I don't see Krishna. Doesn't matter. He intensely wants to see Krishna. He's having these ecstasies. I'm right now reading Ancha 15. So he's having these ecstasies where he sees Krishna. And then the devotees wake him up. And then he says, what are you doing? I was seeing Krishna. Krishna went in the cave with Radharani. I was picking flowers. I didn't get to see their pastimes. What did you do? Intensely wants to see Krishna. Dying without seeing Krishna. And yet, Krishna, if you don't want to see me, I still love you. Both of those together. Both together. Without seeing you, everything's finished. It would be better if I died. But if I died, you would be unhappy. So I'll live. That's what Radharani is saying. She's saying, without you, I'm ready to die, but then you'll cry. So I don't want to make you cry. So when we have that intensity, then Prabhupada was saying this morning, then you'll see Krishna 24 hours. It won't be some little vague glimpse, some little hint, some little tease, some little message like the demigods catch, but 24 hours with these eyes, problems. So that's what we should be aiming for, going step by step in a mature, honest way. But that should be our goal, to go there. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Yes.
Question. So, thank you for such a deep lecture. I was wondering, even on my own level, I know that it's not pure.
So, how to When we have desire to serve Krishna, to develop relationship with Him, we usually tend to take up some service, some responsibility, engage ourselves. And in my own experience, when we do that, with that motivation, which is still not pure, fully, our mind becomes overwhelmed with so many things that we have to do, so many things that are happening, and this and that, and this is the biggest issue why sometimes we cannot develop this eagerness for Krishna. We would like to be really be there for Him all the time, you know, like this yearning effect. So how to, is this a normal process that we need to cross to purify ourselves in spiritual life, or we are over endeavoring?
Let me see if I understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is that the service we take up for Krishna becomes so engaging of our mind that it interferes with our development of anxiety to please Him.
Yeah, in Brahmacharya ashram and Grihastha ashram.
Either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes people think this is a problem just in the Grihastha ashram. But it's also a problem for the Brahmacharis in the temple. It's also a problem for the sannyasis. It's a problem for everybody. That our service itself can take up so much of our mental attention that we forget who we're doing it for. We become absorbed in the thing in and of itself. Yes?
Yes, it absorbs itself, and also because we are taking it so much, we don't have so much space, you know, like to really yearn for Krishna, but we are mostly, you know, how to do this, how to do that. Even in chanting, sometimes it happens that we do.
Yeah, Prabhupada actually said that one time, that there was so much anxiety about managing the movement, it was disturbing his japa. He told that to, I think it was Shruti Kirti one time. So, of course, I'm just thinking of the verses in the Bhagavatam, that Mother Yasoda was not very peaceful because she was always trying to keep Krishna from the demons and from the water and the fire. So she was not so peaceful. I'm wondering if several things here. First of all, if we're mixing up bhakti with another process. Because in the processes, particularly of Dhyan Yoga and Gyan Yoga, the main elements of the process is a mental peace and stillness that gives you the facility to focus your mind on the Lord. And bhakti, we focus our mind on the Lord through emotional attachment, which does still the mind in terms of material thoughts. It does make the material thoughts and the selfish thoughts still. But we don't try to still the mind first. This is the whole question of the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna is saying, should I just love you first, or should I become pure first and then love you? So I believe that even in ISKCON, you know, we have this idea that first I should be able to have a still, peaceful mind, and then I can yearn for Krishna. Whereas it's the yearning for Krishna that will make the mind still to material things. It's taking the anxieties for Krishna that will get rid of the material anxieties. So that's the first thing I was thinking of. The second thing is an example that I give all the time, and that was, so the way my daughter got married is that a friend of ours told us about this one devotee who I had known when he was very young, like 2 years old. And she said that he was looking to get married. So I contacted his parents and, you know, we looked into him and we did some astrology charts and so forth. But they didn't meet each other right away. In fact, we were living on the east coast of America and he was on the west coast. It's about 2,000 miles, so what is that? 3,600 kilometers away or something. Distance, very far. So once everything looked good, they started calling. 2-3 days they were calling. In those days, it was expensive to make a long distance call. Now the phones have changed, but anyway, it was like that. And I said, look, this is costing much too much money. So then they were chatting on the computer. And after a while, they decided they liked each other. Actually, after a very short while, like maybe about an 11th of a second, they decided that they liked each other. And each one of them decided, yes, I want to marry that person. Anyway, then he was calling me and saying, can I come, can I come? How much longer do we have to wait? So we arranged that he would come in 3 weeks. And my daughter at that time was a Gurukul teacher. So, you know, you're a Gurukul teacher, you have to deal with all these children, and you have to teach about mathematics, you have to teach about science. It's very mentally engaging. It's not the kind of thing... You can't be teaching 15 children mathematics and simultaneously be having a conversation with somebody else. It fully engaged your mind. But she said during that time she was thinking about this man all day long. I mean, that's there. And the other example I use is of a pregnant woman. So a woman who's pregnant, I was giving this example someplace recently and there was actually a pregnant woman in the class. And I asked her, I said, do you ever forget about your baby? She said, never. You know, when you're eating, you're thinking, is this good for the baby? All the time. You're doing so many things. And to other people, they're not aware. But the woman is always aware. It's constant. It really never... She never forgets that she's pregnant. Especially once the baby's moving. So when there's affection, then we can simultaneously be fully absorbed in something. I mean, obviously, we see like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had external consciousness, internal consciousness, and mixed. So that full absorption in Krishna's lila, in total internal consciousness, Mahaprabhu would lose all awareness of the external world, which is what we traditionally think of as samadhi. Shamaka Rishi, who doesn't hear Maharaj Parikit, Lord Shiva, who doesn't hear Daksha. So Mahaprabhu did demonstrate that kind of samadhi. But then he would have mixed internal and external, where he was absorbed in the leelas and there, but he was also interacting with people in the world. And then he had external consciousness, where he was interacting in the world more or less like anybody else would. But he didn't stop having that absorption in Krishna. And we see Srila Prabhupada, he was interacting with the world. The Goswamis, generally they were interacting with the world, running so many things, taking so much responsibility. So the main time that we're supposed to be working on intensifying our attachment to Krishna is during the times of our sadhana. During our japa, our gayatri, our deity worship, our studying the Bhagavatam. In fact, it's nice to explain when Rupa Goswami says, always remember Krishna, never forget him. I'm pretty sure it's in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, maybe Jiva Goswami's, where he says, for the beginner, that means at least regularly. Like Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya can mean always, and it can also mean daily, regularly, as a regular. So we have some time that we focus exclusively and as deeply as we can on getting that yearning for Krishna. Now the idea is that by doing that, it will start to permeate the rest of our activities. That's the idea. Now, if we don't become really absorbed during the time of our sadhana, then it will take a very long time. But that's the idea. I mean, why was my daughter thinking about her future husband when she was teaching mathematics? Because she had spent time chatting with him the night before. Because she spent time looking at his picture and meditating on his picture and talking to him on the phone and chatting with him. When that was her full, total focus. Therefore, when she was doing other things, she could be absorbed in him. Now, of course, materially that doesn't last. After they were married for 10 years, she wasn't thinking about him 24 hours a day. Materially, it doesn't work like that. You know, my babies are in their 30s and 40s, and I don't think about them all day. I'm not constantly aware of their existence as I was when they were young. So materially this decreases, but spiritually it increases. Spiritually it increases. And even during the day, we're supposed to make some effort. That's the definition of sadhana bhakti. Whether we're making an effort because we're convinced by the scripture and the guru, which is vaidhi sadhana, or whether we're making an effort because there has been some awakening of spontaneous affection, which makes it Raganuga Sadhana. Whatever is our motive, the idea is that we're still, that sadhana bhakti implies some effort. Even at the highest stage of sadhana bhakti, which is a shakti, where the Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, it's the last stage of sadhana bhakti, where the mind naturally flows to Krishna, there's still some degree of effort involved. So, we do need, I think that's one of the reasons why there's noon Gayatri, which is always, you know, like, you're right in the middle of a thousand things, right? Okay, I gotta stop and chant my noon Gayatri. I think about this when I'm in the Muslim countries, you know, and they have their five times a day prayer. It's the same principle. Stop. Most of them don't, by the way. You hear the call to prayer and you look around and nobody's stopping. Stop. Remember. And, you know, to have those times in our day, stop. Remember. Oh, yeah. Now, an ordinary person at their work, they may have the picture of their family on the desk. Something. Stop. Remember. Remember. Oh yeah, I'm doing this for Krishna. It's about Krishna. And as we do that, as we improve the quality of our sadhana during our sadhana time, and as during the day, increasingly, we try to have even the things of the world, the sunlight, the air, the water. I was just hearing Prabhupada say that this morning also. It was funny. I turned on Prabhupada's lecture as soon as I got out of bed. And the first thing I always do when I get out of bed is drink a glass of water. And the first thing Prabhupada said in the lecture is, when you drink water, you can remember. Is that all right? Yes.
When you spoke about how sometimes people come to you and they have different problems and struggles in their life which they share and ask for help. Sometimes in our devotional service when we meet some situation, we maybe fear that some of the situation may even influence our life. And then maybe we are not so much eager to help devotees and be there for them. So my question is, what should be our understanding and how to give attention and care and not absorb all these problems and carry it on our shoulders? And
Well, the first thing is that we can't help everybody all the time. I realized this as a Gurukul teacher. There were some children I took in as students who I should not have taken in. And I concluded, I am not an emergency room doctor. It's not my job. Prabhupada says that the highest principle is to save others, and higher than that is to save yourself. Some people we cannot help. We just can't help them. Or we can't help them without damaging ourselves. We're little jivas. We're not God. And we have limits. So I think it's one measure of practical humility. Just like, you know, it's always like this. It's always the last day you're someplace that all of a sudden people think, oh, I didn't get to talk to Urmila yet. And she's leaving in an hour. But maybe when I'm leaving in an hour is not the time to talk to me with your problems. And so people come at the last minute and say, you know, oh, can I talk to you? And then I have to say, I'm sorry. You know, I have to go now. I mean, the saddest thing to me one time was, it was actually in many years ago, it was in Slovenia, where it was like 8:30 at night and I still had two rounds left and I was very, very tired. I was really tired. I try not to do that, not to have japa to finish at night when I'm tired, but somehow it happened. And these people knocked on my door, this couple, and they wanted to talk to me. But they hadn't arranged it in advance, you know, they came. They said they had traveled by train for hours, and they had to leave early in the morning. And you know what? I said no. I still feel sad that I said no. But I said, I'm sorry. I need to finish my japa and go to bed. I don't chant my 16 rounds. I'm not I'm useless for anybody. I'm not going to sacrifice my promise to Prabhupada and my basic. I'm sorry, I just can't. That's, I'm not allowed to do that. There's a sacrifice I'm not allowed to make. I mean, obviously, if somebody had their arm cut off, then I would make up my rounds the next day and take them to the hospital. Hare Krishna. You know, I mean, there's, you know, whatever. Not talking about somebody's dying. But there is a, you know, there's a limit. There's a limit. Just happened the other day. Somebody knocked at my door at like 8:30 and wanted to talk to me. And then I said, you know, it's 9 o'clock now. I need to go to sleep. Sometimes I just, I'm sorry. I have to chant my japa. I have to read. I have to make sure that I'm okay. I said the highest principle is to save others, and higher than that is to save yourself. Like on the airplanes, you know, put your oxygen mask on first. Why do they say that? Because they're going to, oh, I have to help my child. I have to help my elderly father. But very quickly, you can become unconscious due to lack of oxygen. And while you're helping them, you'll go unconscious. You won't help either them or yourself. Whereas if they go unconscious, but you have your oxygen mask on, you'll still be able to revive them. You're just talking about a couple seconds. So that's there. Then the other thing is learning to help people in a way where you don't become depleted. So that is the science, really. That's something that can be learned. And it's now 9 o'clock, so I don't think I can go into this in depth. I actually learned this from Birakrishna Swami in one of the European camps. I forget what country it was. And he was teaching how... I was asking him, why are you teaching this? And he said, it allows me to help people without getting depleted or exhausted. And I'm like, I want that. And basically what it is... I don't really have time to, you know, he taught it over many days. But it's a way of connecting with people's deepest needs and desires instead of their immediate problems. Because people's deepest needs and desires are always totally enlivening. Always. Even the, you know, the most malicious, evil person, at their deepest level, their needs are all spiritual. Maybe Prabhupada was talking about that he saw this man butchering chickens and enjoying the when the chickens were dancing without their heads. And he said the little boy was, he said his son was crying and the father was enjoying. And Prabhupada gave us as an example of someone trying to enjoy the ghastly rasa. He said, if you really want to enjoy the ghastly rasa, you should worship who? Krishna, which form of Krishna, guys? Yeah, Nisingadev. You guys are all thinking there's only material ghastly rasa. There's a spiritual ghastly rasa, everybody. You don't have to go to Durga. There's Nisingadev. Even Krishna is ghastly sometimes. He has those rivers of blood fighting Jarasandha, right? So Prabhupada said, if you really want... But Prabhupada was looking at this butcher. And what was he seeing? He really wants Krishna. That's what Prabhupada saw. And what this person really wants to enjoy is Nisingalila. But he's such a fool that instead of enjoying Nisingalila, he's cutting off chicken heads. You understand? So you feel compassion. This unfortunate jiva who's thinking he's going to enjoy cutting off chicken heads when he should enjoy Nisingadeva putting intestines around his neck. That's what he should be enjoying. So as we can see with everybody, what are people looking for? Everything everybody's looking for is ultimately spiritual. You can think of it in terms of the rasas. Prabhupada says this in the preface to Nectar Devotion. Everything everyone is doing is to try to enjoy rasa. And every rasa originally exists with Krishna. Whatever rasa someone is trying to enjoy, even the most disgusting, perverted, horrific way, what they really are trying to do is enjoy a relationship with God. That's what they want. You can always connect with that. And when you connect with that, you will feel enlivened. Even if their problems, their difficulties are terrible. I mean, people have told me some of the most unbelievable, I don't want to repeat it, things people tell me. Just unbelievable. Most people have very ordinary problems. I can't fix my mind during japa. My guru Dave gave this instruction and I'm angry and I don't know what to do. You know, my husband has a gambling problem. Those are the ordinary things. But sometimes it's really, you know, something really horrific. But always, you're not really connecting with that. That's not... And we can't really fix those things anyway, frankly. Honestly. What we can help a person do is to access the reality of their inner self, which then allows them to fix those other problems. That's really what we can do. Now, we don't always present it like that to people, because if you present things like that to people, they may not appreciate it. They may think you're not really listening to them and you don't really care. I mean, I was just talking to one devotee who's a life coach about a question that I had in my service. And, you know, she was taught, well, maybe you have this childhood trauma. I'm like, I don't have any childhood traumas. She said, well, everybody says that, but they do. I'm like, I really don't have any childhood traumas. And we weren't getting much of anywhere. And then finally, she said, well, I don't think I can tell you this, but, you know, the real problem is that we're just not looking for our relationship with Krishna. We're looking for it someplace else. I said, yes, that's what I needed to hear. Thank you. She said, I didn't think I could say that to you. I'm like, well, why not? Anyway, we can't always say that to someone. We can't always go to people and say, you know, the real problem is you're looking for rasa separate from Krishna. That's your real problem. Or you can look at it in psychological terms, that you're trying to meet your needs separately from Krishna. The same kind. It's the same thing. You're just looking at it with different terminology. That was the way Krishna's Swami presented it. That we have, you know, original spiritual needs for happiness, for authenticity, for connection, and so forth, and we're trying to fulfill them in the wrong way. But however you want to go through it, you want to go through the psychological terminology of needs, you want to get through it through the rasa terminology. I mean, rasa was also... Rupa Goswami borrowed rasa terminology from a mundane source also. So, either way, you connect with that. Internally, your emotional connection is with that. And whenever you're dealing with the external details, you deal with that, keeping that emotional connection. And therefore, you'll be enlivened even by the most difficult people and the most difficult situations. But there are some situations and some people that you have to say, I don't think I'm the right person. Either I can't do it now, sorry, we can make an appointment for another time, or I'm not the right person. And I do this a lot. People ask me questions, and I say, you know, I'm not the right person. Sorry. Not my area, not my field. Or I just can't help that person. Maybe even it's my area, but there's just not the chemistry, and I just can't help. All right, we should stop now. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.